Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about my bank, who's making SMB lending faster and easier than ever. Also, Capital One had what we call a JADB, just another data breach. I should put giant data breach in there. So we'll be talking about this and more on this week's FinTech Newscast. Please subscribe to keep up with these and the latest in FinTech news. All right, let's get started. Joining me this week is Steve.
Hello, John. Good to be back.
I feel like you're trying to seduce me here. Okay. Good to have you here. And Monica.
Hello. It's great to be here.
Now I don't mind. All right. So Jack Ma has been on the cutting edge of a lot of things, and now he's jumping into the doing some new things with SMB lending.
He is indeed, yeah. Actually, it's Teacher Ma Ryu. I think he goes by Teacher Ma in Chinese.
Yes, I'm sorry.
That's the moniker he uses.
Can you say that in Mandarin with the correct tones?
No. And I won't even try. So there's been some news in the past couple of days about Jack Ma's My Bank product. So this is part of the Alibaba sort of, you know, universe of products, and My Bank is a service that enables SMB lending in China. So China has traditionally had an underdeveloped SMB lending market and space
due to the kind of over representation of state banks in their banking system.
Correct. Yeah, just a culture that's not all that inclined to borrow as much. They're a bit more savers, right?
So there was all this peer-to-peer lending, but that was more like consumer side.
Correct.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's increasingly difficult to actually get any sort of real financial data on an SMB that you want to give a loan to. So, so what Jack Ma has done is that they have incorporated something like 3,000 data elements and put it into this app so that an SMB can apply and within seconds, without any human input whatsoever, get a loan.
So, is that what is different about that versus? Some of the peer-to-peer lending kind of products that use your social media and other non-conventional kind of loan parameters.
Yeah. So what's different for this one is that it serves a more important part of the economy than just peer-to-peer. Mm-hmm. You know, famously, SMBs are the boiler room of the economy, right? They provide the most jobs and the most economic growth. And they have been, again, underserved by the Chinese markets and the Chinese banks, which tend to focus more on the larger enterprise stuff.
Wow.
I think, isn't the largest bank in the world the Chinese Agricultural Bank or something? So anyway, there's somewhere in the top five.
I think, though, that they are actually using My Bank, or as I like to say it, My Bank, due to the way it's capitalized. They are using all of the same social credit scores and unconventional measures that you can look at in a country with extremely lax privacy regulations, such as China. So they are including that. So it is similar to the shadow banking world in that way. But definitely, to John's point, small businesses have a lot more room to grow and create additional economic activity in a way that personal loans generally do not.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure he's going to get government support with anything that helps businesses because they definitely want to goose up the economy without having not useful kind of investing like they've had before with the ghost towns and propping up state firms that aren't as productive as private enterprises.
Yeah, did China have its lowest growth rate in 17 years?
I think that's the metric that I saw, yeah. I was just in Asia, and I read in the papers in English that the Chinese Politburo wants to now focus away from export and more internal consumption.
Well, they've been wanting to do that for a while, but it's hard to do in a nation where people have historically saved something like half of their income.
But there's very little to no social safety net, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. It's also worth
and only one child or one grandchild to support all of you.
I think they've changed that, right?
They have. Well, the demographics are done in many ways.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's not going to change overnight.
That's not going to change overnight. Yeah. But the metrics are actually quite fascinating. So the article that I have here mentioned that they've lent so far in a little under 4 years, 2 trillion yuan, which sounds like a lot, but it's actually a little bit under $300 billion. It's still
that still sounds like a lot.
Yeah, it's still a lot of money, but it's not as big as 2 trillion yuan. And they've also lent to nearly 16 million companies. That is the most impressive.
So these are very small, on the smaller side of the SMB equation, huh?
I think, yeah, they're on the smaller side. I think they're on the smaller side,
which,
yeah.
Which could be like getting a bigger boost because you're taking them from, you know, just something where they're on their own to getting 2, 3, 4 employees is a huge sales and productivity boost.
It's a huge hurdle, yeah. And they're sort of using a model similar to what Square does where they take a peek into your cash flow to make, you know, to make.
Oh, if they're decisions. Doing the credit card processing.
Right. You know, because, you know, I again, if you travel in East Asia, everyone takes Alipay or cash and no credit cards. And it's interesting how they're using that data to actually inform their underwriting decisions. And
so what's the difference between what Alibaba is doing and Ant Financial?
Ant Financial is a subsidiary of Alibaba. Alibaba is sort of like the Amazon of China.
Yeah, Alibaba is more of the marketplace. Ant Financial is more of the financial services provider. And Ant Financial,
so is this happening in Ant Financial or Alibaba?
Ant Financial is the largest stakeholder of my bank.
Right. So this is sort of three layers down. It's Alibaba, Ant Financial, and then my bank.
So it's like the parent and the subsidiary are both invested into a third lower subsidiary
or another. It's not even clear if Alibaba is invested under Alibaba's name. It's not clear to me.
Right. They're all under the purview of Jack Ma, but I think the ownership relationship here is that Alibaba owns Ant Financial, which is the biggest financial player in the world, I think. And then my bank is part of the suite of services that Alibaba offers.
My bank
has multiple owners, but Ant Financial is the largest shareholder. So I'm imagining that they probably wanted to go to a number of different entities to get the capital to ship $300 billion out to 16 million companies over the last 3 years.
Okay, so it's not like just a department of one or the other.
No.
It's a new entity
that's
getting funding from maybe both the parent and subsidiary.
Right. Okay. Right. And they also, very interesting, they also have a 1% default rate, which is incredible.
Yeah.
You wouldn't see that in the U.S.
How long have they been around, though?
4 years.
4 years.
Oh, okay. Well, so, I guess if you're, it's kind of like the secured card version of for SMBs. When you're the one transacting all their sales,
then you know if they're in trouble, you know what they need. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's kind of locking the savings account or the equivalent kind of thing that businesses do here.
You can also start off small with the amount that you're loaning, so you're not necessarily as worried about the total failure of the business.
Right, exactly, yeah.
It will be interesting to see what countries this model can be exported to really successfully, right? Because it seems like you obviously, whether it's to small businesses or to individuals, you know, you need to have individuals or small businesses, but you also need very different privacy and kind of lending regulations.
Yes.
And certainly those countries exist. So it'll just be interesting to see how this spreads and how fast it's adopted in different places.
It's also, I think this is for me, I've always been interested in the role of ecosystems that can play in the financial services sector. And you notice, for example, where in China you have Alipay owning basically the whole game with peer-to-peer payments. If you go to South Korea, Kakao has their own bank now. They're an actual banking entity. They have peer-to-peer transfers. You can basically run your entire life in Kakao. And I think that the types of countries that would embrace this model are those where they would have a very strong ecosystem plays and maybe a more centralized distribution model where they have sort of fewer players, unlike in the U.S. And those who are there can, again, operate on a number of different sectors and stages in the payment process as well.
What is also interesting to me is if you are a traditional lender, and I get that in China, the existing banks were not catering to this part of the market. But, you know, here you look at the United States where we have a small business administration that kind of pushes and encourages and subsidizes our financial institutions to loan to small businesses. And then you think, well, gosh, how many hurdles does a small business owner have to go through to get one of those loans when they would probably be like, you can see whatever you need to see about the financial health of my company and myself, but just give me this money in 3 minutes.
Right. Yeah, interesting. Well, let's see if that gives a boost to the Chinese economy, which gets them up to their actual official growth numbers. All right. So our next story is about a big data breach at Capital One, which, you know, that can happen at any place. So we definitely want to, you know, talk about it. It's a very interesting story, actually, this one. Besides the size of the hack, which actually isn't that unique these days.
Just 106 million people's social security numbers, account numbers, home addresses.
Yeah, they're in the middle ranks of the big data breaches.
No social, I thought. I thought it was only like 45,000 people got their social exposed, but the rest were not. They were all masked.
Well, 44,000. I know, but that's not known.
In the context of 100 million people, it seems like it's a drop in the bucket. Like, yeah. Barely anybody got their SSN exposed.
This is in the U.S. and Canada, all these victims of this hack.
Sorry, yeah. Canada.
Yeah. And these are credit card applications as well as credit cards. So a wide range, but it goes to show how even a simple error, which it looks like this was, you know, relatively a simple error, like something with the setup of their firewall, mm-hmm. caused this opening to be available to hackers to walk through, allowed this hacker, Paige Thompson, who's, you know, okay, we made you famous, great job, to go through. And they're not sure that she was the only one, because anybody could exploit this particular type of firewall issue. Mm. But she was definitely the most careless, I'll venture to say. She was a very prolific sharer on social media, which led the FBI straight to her.
Was she sharing this in, like, hacker forums?
GitHub,
my God.
So what she had done, oh my God, Paige. Like, I feel like you're kind of letting the gender down right now. We're supposed to be better than this. So she
Hack, you mean the way she got caught.
Correct. So she went on GitHub kind of bragging about, oh, look what I did, and I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Ha, 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 hope I don't get caught. And of course, somewhere in where she's posting these profiles, there was a link to her, and I kid you not, people, her professional resume.
Oh, my God.
Wow. It's a good job.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, of course, she used to work for Amazon Web Services, and that is exactly where all of this data was being stored. So that's a very interesting risk to consider when you've got Microsoft and Google and Amazon. They are the biggest cloud players in the world. Sorry, Oracle, you're just not there yet. and they have tens of thousands of employees working on this kind of stuff. How well vetted are they? You know, what did they do with their knowledge when they leave?
It wasn't clear that it was Amazon's fault.
No.
I think it was part of the Capital One. And Amazon was quick to point out, this is part of the Capital One firewall. But the data she accessed because of that firewall break, allowed her to get into the data that was stored on Amazon
Web
Services.
What I'm saying is her experience at AWS probably gave her a lot of the background knowledge that she needed. And I will also say this. Whenever you have two companies working together on anything technological, you absolutely increase the potential for mistakes, because people's domains of expertise aren't necessarily as overlapping as they might potentially be. That's not a reason not to use technology partners. It just means that somebody thinks, oh, well, the firewall's fine, and somebody else doesn't know that they're supposed to check somebody else's firewall, and then pretty soon, 106 million records have been leaked.
Yeah, and Capital One was kind of known in the industry as being ahead of the curve on this cloud sharing.
They were. They were actually, people would sing their praises for embracing the cloud and being sort of tech forward. But this probably dampened the enthusiasm and the willingness of other banks to actually embrace
the cloud. It's not clear that's because of the cloud kind of setup that caused this problem. Check all your basic setups in your firewall first as well. So it kind of like, they described it as a wall maybe having 5 million windows, and you leave one window open, and she found it.
That's what happens. Yeah, I wonder whether we'll get any sort of redress from this, any sort of
your $45 in the mail,
something, $12, something, anything
for all your personal information. Yeah, for having to change your ID.
I think I had a Capital One account maybe in college when I got in trouble with my credit.
Steve.
Yes.
What's your score?
847.
Oh, man. Well, you should be checking your credit reports for sure after this.
Yeah. Keep an eye on it.
You and 105,999,999 other people. Yeah. And there are some websites that are trying to tell you if you're one of the people that have been affected. Of course, some of those are probably phishing sites trying to get your information anyway.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Whether it was Capital One or somebody else, they've all got your info.
You have been affected.
You have been affected.
The same way your ex-girlfriend probably has your number.
Yeah, I don't know if it was Target's point-of-sale hack from a few years ago or Equifax's hack or Capital One, but it's out there.
And for sure, be careful who you hire. I mean, they're trying to get the most technical people, but I don't know if there's a psychological stability test along with this as well.
I think the lesson here is don't hire female engineers.
Oh, don't worry. I'll stomp his feet when we're done, but you don't want to hear his mewling yelps of pain.
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of a mental health issue too. I guess she had suffered from depression. She said she was sad because her cat had died. And one of the indicators that the ways they tracked her down was she put her cat's medical veterinarian bill online, and they could trace her back that way as well. So she left a lot of breadcrumbs and trails. She wasn't very careful. She said, basically, I've strapped a bomb vest to myself, so she knew she was going down, basically. So, along with technical skills, you have to be very careful who you're bringing in, and that's the human equation is one that often breaks down.
Right. That's often happens, yeah.
All right, let's go from that happy story to our final bites, where we take a look at a number and the fascinating story behind it.
What's your number, John?
My number is 20. And that is 20 minutes that a company called ClearBank, based in Toronto, says that they can approve your equity investment into their company. So even faster than this My Bank automatic lending is automation in investments in your firm, which is notorious for having a lot of legal hurdles, a lot of face-to-face meeting, making 100-page decks to lay out your business plan, your customer acquisition costs, all of that stuff.
Oh, wait. So this is basically for you to get investment
from ClearBank investors
into your company?
So they'll invest your company, and they say that they'll approve your investment in 20 minutes. So they call it the 20-minute term sheet.
So if I pitch to ClearBank with an idea,
you don't have to pitch. You put in your data, they'll verify it in 20 minutes, send you the money.
Wow.
So you say how much you want, and depending on how much you want, there'll be different terms of the payback. But basically, you pay back 106% of the investment and before you're done, and they're getting some percent of your sales as you go. But you get this capital boost at the beginning. They'll go from anywhere from $10,000 up to $10 million. And this is for e-commerce businesses. So it's something that they're focusing their expertise on those parameters, the metrics that make that those companies work. There's two key metrics that they look at: ad spend and unit economics, positive unit economics. So, your margin on your sales. And so they're making, we've talked about peer-to-peer lending for consumers, small to medium-sized banks. And then now ClearBank is working on making it easier for an investment.
So is this for the budding e-commerce marketeer who doesn't want to be Amazon's slave?
If you can get away from them, I guess. Yeah.
But I wonder, isn't the whole one of the selling points of a VC that they have that sort of personal coaching and connection, and they can open doors for you? This seems like a very impersonal.
You'll give up a lot more equity for until you IPO or whatever. This is for some use case. If you're at a certain point where the cash is going to do a boost for you, and you don't want to give up your equity, and there's another alternative.
And VCs, they're looking for the big, huge payouts.
The 100x return.
Right. Yeah. I don't get the vibe that that's what this firm is looking for. They just want to make some money. Good for them.
6% yeah.
6%.
How sensible. How Canadian and sensible.
Brought to you by the kind folks in Canada. Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm up next, and I'm going to share a statistic that really surprised me. My final bite is 7%, and that is the percentage of Swiss people who own crypto. So 7% of all Swiss people own cryptocurrency, which I just find very interesting. Switzerland is a small country, and it is certainly one with a very sophisticated and renowned banking system. So you can certainly see why folks there would be interested in dipping their toes in. But my oh my, only 7%.
I think there's a whole thing with banking privacy in Switzerland. So you know, a lot of shady money as well. So I'm not surprised that they have the highest cryptocurrency owning rate in the world.
Yeah, yeah. And I would be interested, and I don't know, listeners, maybe you can tell us, what that percentage is here in the U.S.
It has to be less than 5%, right?
I mean, I'd be shocked if it's 2.
Yeah. In SF. SF maybe, right? Yeah. It has to be very
Is there a crypto owner in this room? Yeah.
Not right now.
No, you sold out. Oh.
It peaked. I'm out.
He did not hodl.
They didn't hodl.
Yeah. No, didn't hodl. All right. Well, my number is a bit of an unknown number. It's a meta number, if you will.
The mystery number. Yeah. Very Steve.
So Steve. So famously, of course, we talked about the Capital One breach, and Equifax this week released their settlement came to light, and they set aside $31 million to pay any customers, any people that were affected by the breach. That's sort of the base level that you can get. I think you can also, by the way, add more money or get more money out if you can quantify the number of hours that you spent dealing with this mess. So that if you spent an hour calling your bank to, you know, check up on your accounts, they give you an extra $20. Anyway, $31 million seems like a massive amount of money, but it's actually not. If everybody who was entitled to this compensation did it, the money would run out by the time they get to 248,000 people.
Jesus.
And just for context here, how many were affected by the Equifax breach? Over 150 million or so. So
see, Capital One, just small-time players.
It's just two-thirds.
Small potatoes,
two-bit players.
Yeah. So if you think you were affected by the Equifax breach, and you likely were, as I was, then head on over to the settlement site, put in your SSN and your last name, and then submit a claim as soon as possible, or they will run out of money.
See, maybe going and using the check cashing services and just being out of the system is not a bad way to go.
Underbanked is a way to go.
Yeah. Under breached also, though.
Underbanked, breached. Yeah.
All right. With that, we think that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening.
Talk to you next week.